Hi and welcome to the Mount Hamilton Baptist Church podcast. We hope you enjoy listening to this message. For more information, go to mhbc.ca.
It is the night of Passover. Passover was an important, meaningful Jewish celebration that included a meal with your loved ones. And earlier that evening, Jesus had set aside a place to have Passover with his closest friends, his disciples, those who had followed him for the last 3 years. They've had this meal together. During that meal, Jesus has said to one of his disciples, Judas, "You're going to betray me." And then they have gone together to a garden called Gethsemane, where Jesus has gone to pray. And we heard last week that he fell before God and said, "Please take this cup from me." But while he's in this garden, the very scene we've just heard happens. And a group of people, religious leaders, Roman soldiers, they come. Judas has shown them where to go, and they arrest Jesus. They're there to arrest him. They have come to take him away. They've come at night to avoid the crowds, it would seem, maybe to make too much of a scene. And even though they've fallen asleep in the garden, I suspect they're very awake right now. Because now this arrest is happening, and this would have been a terrifying, terrifying moment. This is the moment to them that would have been, they believed, the beginning of the end. And we need to look back, I think, to understand so deeply how significant what was happening in this moment was as this arrest takes place. Actually, we have to go really far back. We can go back a number of decades and remember that those who followed Jesus and Jesus were Jews living in the region of Judea, and they were an occupied people. What that meant is that Rome, the Roman Empire, is a superpower at this time. Rome is in charge. They don't like that Rome is in charge. And for decades, they have not been their own nation. They have not been independent. That has been hard. And because of that, they have been waiting, as their scriptures said there would be, for a Messiah, which means deliver. They've been waiting for someone who's going to come to give them their nation back. And for the last 3 years, this group of disciples who are here in the garden now have followed Jesus, and they have come, most of them, to believe in some level that Jesus is their Messiah, in particular Peter, this disciple we see here. Peter has earlier, we read in this very book, Peter has said, when Jesus said, "Who do you say I am?" Peter says, "I think you're the Messiah." He said it. He thinks Jesus is this deliverer, is the one who's going to set them free from Rome. And then we have to think back to also some of the other things that Peter and the disciples would have known, remembered, would have grown up with, to something that had happened centuries before. Something that we actually remember, the Jewish people remember, during Hanukkah. Now, I talked about Hanukkah a bit over Christmas, which is an interesting time to talk about Hanukkah. Probably even stranger to talk about Hanukkah and Lent. But bear with me, because Hanukkah actually celebrates a really significant thing. And what had happened in the 2nd century BC is that this nation, Israel, still ruled, but by a different superpower now. Because again, the ancient world, it went power to power to power. And the people in charge are known as the Seleucids. This is a very complicated story, and I simply don't have time to get into all the history, so I'm going to do a very stripped-down version. And to say simply that the leader is named Antiochus IV. He was a rather pretentious leader. He actually called himself Epiphanius, which is like to say that he was divine. He wanted people to worship him, worship their gods. And for a number of different reasons, Antiochus did not like the Jews, and he decided to get rid of them. He declared the practice of Judaism illegal. He wanted to stamp out their religion once and for all. He made it illegal to worship. He confiscated scrolls from their temple and burned them. He said it was illegal to observe Sabbath and circumcision, and people were put to death for circumcising their children, which was part of their religious practice. And then he set up an army that would go to town to force people to sacrifice to their gods. And in one town, things took a turn. In this particular town, in this particular day, they're in a rural area, and this soldier, at the command of Antiochus, has shown up, and he has said, "You will commit this sacrifice to my gods." And a priest, an old priest named Mattathias, takes out his sword as he's about to make the sacrifice, and he kills the soldier, and he says, I will not do it. And he and his five sons flee, and from that moment, a revolt begins. Mattathias' son, who's actually named Judas, so we can think about who Judas was probably named after, the later Judas, Judas Maccabeus, he ends up, and these other brothers, they lead this rebellion. They say, we are standing up against this. They will not take our religion away. And they lead this revolt that goes on for decades, and they ultimately were allowed to then be in charge of their kingdom again. They defeat these rulers. Defeat's a strong word. Long story short, they are ultimately now allowed to have their own kingdom. It becomes known as the Hasmonean dynasty. They have a lot more freedom. That dynasty lasts for just over a century until 37 BC, when a new superpower comes in called Rome, takes them all over again. So you can picture it, right? They've got the Seleucids, people before the Seleucids, the Hasmonean. They've got this century or so of freedom. And then the Romans come back. This is only 37 BC. This is only like 40 years before. Well, I guess closer to 60 by the time Jesus is alive, and they're remembering this. So think about Peter. Peter had grown up with this story of a hero named Mattathias who took out his sword and started a rebellion so that their people did not die. Peter had been living in a nation that was now ruled by foreigners. Peter loved Jesus. Peter believed Jesus was the deliverer to set them free. And remember that the same Peter and all the disciples had seen people arrested before, and they knew what happened to people who got arrested by Roman soldiers. And it wasn't a night in jail to teach you a lesson, and it wasn't a lengthy trial, and if you could afford a good defense attorney, maybe you'd get off. It was often an unfair trial. It was a quick trial, and it ended in death, a cruel death. And in this moment, I think that this is what Peter believed. I think what Peter said, this is it, right? This is our time to defend ourselves, because if this happens, this will be the end of our hope. I have to defend what's happening here. And so he took out his sword. And like Mattathias, who he would have grown up learning all about, he reached out. I think he was probably aiming to kill and probably had bad aim, and he cut off his ear. And in that moment, I believe Peter was actually saying a few things. He was saying, I will not let this dream die. I will start the revolution, and I will stand up for the future of my people, and I will defend the one that I love. I'll defend Jesus. And in that moment that Peter lashes out, I think for what we would all say is, that makes a lot of sense that he reacted that way. Jesus turns the tables, and he looks at Peter, and he says, put away your sword. And in essence, he says, Peter, let me be arrested, which means let me die. And I think this would have been pretty shocking for Peter and all those there. In fact, at the end, they just turn and run away. They're so terrified. And in fact, it actually shouldn't have been. Jesus had been teaching about this his whole ministry. In the fall, I did a whole series on something called the Sermon on the Mount, which was a time when Jesus taught, we believe, a summary of so many of Jesus' teachings. And some of you may remember that in that sermon, Jesus said, if someone strikes you on one cheek, turn them the other cheek and let them slap that one too. Do you remember that? And he said, love your enemies. Right? But I think that maybe Peter in this moment is sort of thinking, but surely, Jesus didn't mean turn the other cheek in a moment like this, right? Like, he doesn't mean it if his life's at stake. He doesn't mean it if someone else's life's at stake, right? And in this moment when Jesus says, put away your sword, you know what I think Jesus actually said? I meant it. And I gotta say, this rocks me a little bit. It makes me ask a whole lot of questions about my own theology, the theology of Christians, for generations, and how we've lived it out. Because woe to us, we do not always live as if Jesus meant it. As if Jesus meant it when he said, choose peace over violence. Instead, like Peter, so often what we say are a whole lot of, but what about? But what about if someone is in danger? But what about if I'm about to be hurt, or someone I love is to be hurt? And sometimes our but what abouts historically in Christian history, in world history, are pretty big stretches, but people made them. For example, but what about if we want to get rid of another religion? You might think that's a weird one, but you know what? Christians said this. Many of you will be familiar with the Crusades, which started in 1095. They lasted for a couple of centuries. Here's an image that someone's put together of one of those Crusades. And they were basically a series of events where people from, I'm simplifying again, but where people from Europe said, by now Jerusalem was being inhabited by people who were Islamic, who were Muslim, and they said, we have to take Jerusalem back. And so what we have to do is we have to send soldiers to get them out of Jerusalem. And there was amazing violence during this time. One story during the Third Crusade that is very well known involved Christian soldiers lining up 3,000 Muslim men, women, and children and slaughtering them all at once. But put away your sword. But what about? But what about, some had said, if we are trying to avoid heresy? Well, people said that during the Inquisition, didn't they? Here's some pictures that people remember the Inquisition, the next one. Here are some of the torture devices used by Christians against other Christians. During the Inquisition, pincers, molten lead, they'd pour boiling water over people's heads. And then if they determined that you didn't quite get it right, they would burn you, as this picture shows, at the stake. But put away your sword. But what about? And then we think we don't do it. But then we say, but what about if we're the good guys and we're trying to stop the bad guys? And we see this in what feels like every single movie, comic book, crime show that we use all the time. When the cop or the superhero comes in and they draw their swords or their guns or their superpower or their fists, and we cheer when the good guy's violence ends the bad guy's violence. And somehow we say to ourselves, well, we're not ignoring Jesus' teaching when he said, turn the other cheek. And we sound, I think, a lot like Peter, and I have done that. I have cheered for the same things. I love to see righteousness went out, and I have tuned out Jesus' voice that actually said, put away your sword. And it's hard because we can ask, well, how can he say such a thing, especially in a moment like this? And that's when we turn back and see what Jesus' response was. And he says to Peter, do you think I cannot call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? Legion was a military term that the Romans used. It referred to an infantry of 6,000. So quite literally, Jesus says, don't you think if I asked God that I could have 72,000 angels here right now? And his journey, of course, was what he says, but that's not what God has called me to do. The scriptures are pointing to something else. And, of course, Jesus' journey was one that would end the next day with him experiencing such extreme violence that he did not deserve and never choosing to use the power that he had to stop it. And when we ask why, the answer was because he trusted in God for God's story to prevail. And I believe when he said to Peter, like, don't you know? I could have called my Father. Is he saying, Peter, don't you trust me? Do you trust my teachings? Do you really believe in my ways? And of course, in this moment, and I get why, Peter didn't. He assumed there was something he had to do, right? He had to fix this. Even if it meant subverting what Jesus had been teaching him for 3 years, he still drew his sword, and woe to us, we draw our sword. We let violence be our Lord. We choose violence over peace, and often it's because we don't trust God to make things right. And I don't just mean physical violence. In fact, for most of us, that's probably not something we struggle with. I'm sure there may be a few of you here who have a good dramatic fight story in your past, but many of us have probably not cut off someone's ear. Okay. But many of us will have the story of that time we told someone off real good. Or when we say, listen, I was just so angry. I had to da-da-da-da-da. You should see how good I got that person online. The tweet, that comment on the Facebook post. We choose division over healing. We choose violence over peace. Does it mean that we never speak out in truth or stand up for what's right? No. Jesus did that all the time. We talked about that in the last series. But the question is, are we seeking peace or are we seeking to be right, to protect our egos, to put someone in their place? I mean, it's true that we often don't cut off people's ears, but sometimes, as the expression goes, we cut people off at the knees, you know? We insult them, we belittle them, we cut them out of our lives, we refuse to apologize, we force people to take sides, mine or theirs. And why do we do it? Because we've all done it, and I could tell you so many stories about myself, we'd be here all day. Because we don't, I think it's because we forget that Jesus knows a better way. We find it hard to trust that. We don't always trust that God can make it right. We don't always trust that if we do things in Jesus' way, that Jesus can work in it. We feel we have to do something, so woe to us. When we could seek peace, we draw our swords with words, with weapons, with fists, and all the while we follow a Jesus who said, "Put away your swords." And of course, while I said it's not just physical violence, but it's the way we talk and the way we engage and how we live in our relationships, it can apply to physical violence. And there are Christian traditions that took Jesus' teachings here very literally. One such group is known as Anabaptists, and we as Baptists have been influenced by much of their teaching, and this is in the 1500s or 1600s, who did teach and do teach, a true Anabaptist, would teach that you should never choose violence, that there's never an occasion that allows it, to what we might see as extreme. So, for example, if you were to say to them, "But what about," because we love "but what abouts," "but what about if someone's coming at you with a gun?" This would be their answer. They would say, "Yep, so obviously you have the choice to take out the gun and defend yourself." We wouldn't take out the gun. "Oh, how does that work?" They'd say, "Well, there's one or two options. If that person's coming at us with the gun and we know they're about to shoot us, we will choose not to, and one of two things will happen. One, and this is the goal, they will see the truth of the peace of Jesus, and their hearts will be changed. Or two, they will kill us, and at least we won't die. We will die not having been disobedient." They would say, better to die obeying Christ than save your life disobeying Christ. It's tough, isn't it? And I guess, and I am challenged by that, because they would say what I work on is my assumption is that protecting my life or protecting the life is the biggest priority. Protecting my life as someone who knows I will die and go to heaven is the biggest priority. When Jesus works on the assumption that doing God's will is the biggest priority. And that is our call as followers of Jesus. And that's what Peter assumed as well, right? That in that moment, the biggest priority, what I need to do right here, is make sure Jesus doesn't die, right? That's what I have to do. It makes sense. Because he saw this as the beginning of the end. But what he didn't understand was it wasn't the beginning of the end. This moment when Jesus was arrested was the beginning of a new beginning. One that could only start if Jesus died. And here's what Jesus knew. Jesus knew that there was a bigger story, that, yeah, he would die, but he would live again. And he didn't need Peter's sword to make it right. It was when he laid down his life that he would change the world. And it is true that we must also die to live. And we mean this metaphorically. And Jesus invited us to this. Jesus said that to live, we must die. And what he meant is that we die to all the things that we think we have to do to make our life a certain way, to make our life the thing that we think it should be. And so we die to needing to prove our strength. We die to saying, "I have to do something," instead of trusting God. And we live as we trust that Jesus' ways are good. Because as Jesus said here, he said, "Those who live by the sword die by the sword." And here's what he realized, that living in constant violence, whether it be emotional, whether it be physical, will not make you safer, happier, or more whole. That when we seek to destroy, it will not make our lives better. And that he has a way that leads to peace. A theologian named Walter Wink said this, and the quote's up here, "Jesus drew a line in the sand and asked if we would step across it, step out of one entire world where violence is always the ultimate solution, into another world where the spiral of violence is finally broken by those willing to absorb its impact into their own flesh. Now, my friends, I want to be clear. I'm not saying that if you are being abused, that you should not leave. I know where all the whatabouts are coming from. And I'm not saying that you're never called to protect yourselves and your friends. I'm not saying that you are never in a place where I've already said that. I'm not saying that we don't stand up against what's wrong and against violence. Please don't just let all those but what is about ums distract you from a bigger truth here. That Jesus is calling us to a new way. A way where we look at the situations we face in our lives and we say, we don't have to believe the lie that the only option before me is to fight or die, to fight or lose. That's the dichotomy the world creates, and it's not true. There's a third option, the way of Jesus, the one that says, how can I work for peace? How can I work for reconciliation? That's our calling. And what it looks like is that if you're in a relationship where, for example, you say, I have to stand my ground here, I won't back down, put away your sword. And in that space where you say, I'm going to give that person a piece of my mind, I'm going to feel so good after, hear Jesus' voice, put away your sword. And in that moment when you say, don't dare stand up against me, put away your sword. We aren't in the Garden of Gethsemane, but we can do this day after day. We can do it in our school playgrounds. We can do it in hockey rinks. We can do it in the office, online, and in our homes. And we can put away our swords because we trust in the God who could call 72,000 angels, but knows what is best for us and knows that the way of peace isn't the beginning of the end, but the beginning of a new beginning. Woe to us. We draw our swords. But hope for us. We can put them away. Let me pray. And then we'll sing our song together. God, I know if I went around this room today, there would be so many who are in situations of conflict right now. And we're not always sure what to do if we don't dig in our heels, if we don't battle it out. And God, we know that you're not saying that it just means we do nothing, but Lord, that we can work for peace. Help us to be people who seek reconciliation, who seek forgiveness, who seek wholeness, who trust that you meant it when you said your way is better. Amen.